chips really are brilliant. I tried to imagine Liv sitting in the English version of the Dairy Queen, measuring the gravitational pull of the moon over a mountain of fries. It was better than picturing Lena on the back of John Breed's Harley. So let's hear about your Gatlin, the one where they call fries by the wrong name. I had never been any farther than Savannah. I couldn't imagine what life would be like in another country. My Gatlin? The pink spots on her cheeks faded. Where you from? I'm from a town north of London called King's Langley.
What?
In Hertfordshire.
Doesn't ring a bell.
She took another bite of her burger. Maybe this will help. It's where they invented Ovaltine. You know, the drink. She sighed. You stir it in milk, and it makes the milk into a chocolate malted. My eyes widened.
You mean chocolate milk? Kind of like Nesquik?
Exactly. It's amazing stuff, really. You should try it sometime. I laughed into my Coke, which spilled on my faded Atari t-shirt. Ovaltine girl meets Quick Boy. I wanted to tell Link, but he would get the wrong idea. Even though it had only been a few hours, I had the feeling she was a friend.
What do you do when you're not drinking Ovaltine and making scientific devices, Olivia Durand of King's Langley?
She crumpled the paper from her cheeseburger. Let's see. Mostly I read books and go to school. I study at a place called Harrow.
Is it?
What?
She scrunched up her nose. Harrowing. H-A-R-R-O-W-I-N-G. 9 across, as in getting on in years and can't take much more of these harrowing times, Ethan Waite.
You can't resist a terrible pun, can you? Liv smiled.
And you didn't answer the question.
No, not especially harrowing. Not for me.
Why not?
Well, for starters, I'm a genius.
She was matter-of-fact, as if she'd just said she was blonde or British. So why did you come to Gatlin? We're not exactly a genius magnet.
Well, I'm part of the AGE, Academically Gifted Exchange, between Duke University and my school. Will you pass the mayonnaise?
Mayonnaise, I tried to say it slowly.
That's what I said.
Why would Duke bother to send you to Gatlin, so you could take classes at Somerville Community College?
No, silly. So I could study with my thesis advisor, the renowned Dr. Marion Ashcroft, truly the only one of her kind.
What is your thesis about?
Folklore and mythology, as it relates to community building after the American Civil War.
Around here, most people still call it the war between the states, I said.
She laughed, delighted. I was glad someone thought it was funny. To me, it was just embarrassing. Is it true people in the South sometimes dress up in old Civil War costumes and fight all the battles over again, for fun?
I stood up. It was one thing for me to say it, but I didn't want to hear it from Liv, too. I think it's time to get going. We've got more books to deliver.
Liv nodded, grabbing her fries. We can't leave these. We should save them for Lucille. I didn't mention that Lucille was used to Amma feeding her fried chicken and plates of leftover casserole on her own china plate, as the sisters had instructed. I couldn't see Lucille eating greasy fries. Lucille was particular, as the sisters would say. She liked Lena, though. As we headed for the door, a car caught my eye through the grease-coated windows. The fastback was making a 3-point turn at the end of the gravel parking lot. Lena made a point of not driving past us. Great. I stood and watched the car skid onto Dove Street. That night, I lay in my bed and stared up at the blue ceiling.
my hands folded behind my head. A few months ago, this would have been when Lena and I went to bed in our separate rooms together, reading, laughing, talking through our days. I had nearly forgotten how to fall asleep without her. I rolled over and checked my old, cracked cell. It hadn't really been working since Lena's birthday, but still, it would ring when someone called me. If someone had. Not like she'd use the phone. Right then, I was back to being the same 7-year-old who had dumped every puzzle in my room into one giant, miserable mess. When I was a kid, my mom sat on the floor and helped me turn the mess into a picture. But I wasn't a kid anymore, and my mom was gone. I turned the pieces over and over in my mind, but I couldn't seem to get them sorted out. The girl I was madly in love with was still the girl I was madly in love with. That hadn't changed. Only now, the girl I was madly in love with was keeping secrets from me and barely speaking to me. Then there were the visions. Abraham Ravenwood, a blood incubus who had killed his own brother, knew my name and could see me. I had to figure out how the pieces fit together until I could see something, some kind of pattern. I couldn't get the puzzle back into the box. It was too late for that. I wished someone could tell me where to put even one piece. Without thinking, I got up and pushed open my bedroom window. I leaned out and breathed in the darkness when I heard Lucille's distinctive meow. Amma must have forgotten to let her back inside. I was about to call out to tell her I was coming when I noticed them. Under my window, at the edge of the porch, Lucille Ball and Boo Radley sat side by side in the moonlight. Boo thumped his tail, and Lucille meowed in response. They sat like that at the top of the porch steps, thumping and meowing, as if they were carrying on as civilized a conversation as any two townsfolk on a summer night. I don't know what they were gossiping about, but it must have been big news. As I lay in bed listening to the quiet conversation of Macon's dog and the sister's cat, I drifted off before they did. June 15th. Southern Krusty.
Don't you lay a finger on a single one of my pies until I ask you to, Ethan Waite.
I backed away from Amma, hands in the air.
Just trying to help.
She glared at me while she wrapped a sweet potato pie, a 2-time winner, in a clean dish towel. The sour cream and raisin pie sat on the kitchen table next to the buttermilk pie, ready for the icebox. The fruit pies were still cooling on the racks, and a dusting of white flour coated every surface in the kitchen.
Only 2 days into summer, and you're already under my feet? You'll wish you were over at the high school taking summer classes if you dropped one of my prize-winning pies. You want to help? Stop moping and go pull the car around.
Tempers were running about as high as temperatures, and we didn't say much as we bumped our way out toward the highway in the Volvo. I wasn't talking, but I can't say anybody noticed. Today was the single biggest day of Amma's year. She had won first place in baked and fried fruit pies and second place in cream pies every year at the Gatlin County Fair for as long as I can remember. The only year she didn't get a ribbon was last year when we didn't go because it was only 2 months after my mom's accident. Gatlin couldn't boast the biggest or the oldest fair in the state. The Hampton County Watermelon Festival had us beat by maybe 2 miles and 20 years, and the prestige of winning the Gatlin Peach Prince and Princess Promenade could hardly compare to the honor of placing in Hampton's Melon Miss and Master pageant. But as we pulled into the dusty parking lot, Amma's poker face didn't fool my dad or me. Today was all about pageants and pies, and if you weren't balancing a pie wrapped as snugly as someone's firstborn, you were pushing a kid in curlers holding a baton toward the pavilion. Savannah's mom was Gatlin's peach pageant organizer, and Savannah was the defending peach princess. Mrs. Snow would be overseeing pageants all day. There was no such thing as too young for a crown in our county. The fair's Best Babies event, where rosy cheeks and diaper dispositions were compared like competing cobblers, drew more spectators than the Demolition Derby did. Last year, the Skippets baby was disqualified for cheating when her rosy cheeks came off on the judge's hands. The county fair had strict guidelines. No formal wear until 2 years old, no makeup until 6 years old, and then only age-appropriate makeup until 12. Back when my mom was around, she was always ready to take on Mrs. Snow, and the peach pageants were one of her favorite targets. I could still hear her saying, "Age-appropriate makeup? Who are you people? What makeup is age-appropriate for a 7-year-old?" But even my family never missed a county fair, except last year. Now, here we were again, carrying pies through the crowds and into the fairgrounds, same as ever.
"Don't jostle me, Mitchell! Ethan, wait, keep up! I'm not gonna let Martha Lincoln or any of those women beat me out of that ribbon on account of you two boys!"
In Amma's shorthand, those women were always the same women. Mrs. Lincoln, Mrs. Asher, Mrs. Snow, and the rest of the D.A.R. By the time my hand was stamped, it looked like 3 or 4 counties had already beaten us there. Nobody missed the opening day at the fair, which meant a trip to the fairgrounds halfway between Gatlin and Peeksville. And a trip to the fairgrounds meant a disastrous amount of funnel cake, a day so hot and sticky you could pass out just from standing, and if you were lucky, some making out behind the Future Farmers of America poultry barns. My shot at anything but heat and funnel cake wasn't looking too good this year. My dad and I dutifully followed Amma to the judging tables under an enormous Southern Crusty banner. Pies had a different sponsor every year, and when it couldn't be Pillsbury or Sara Lee, you ended up with Southern Crusty. Pageants were crowd-pleasers, but pies was the granddaddy of them all. The same families had been making the same recipes for generations, and every ribbon won was the pride of one great Southern house and the shame of another. Word had it that a few women from town had their sights set on keeping Amma from winning first place this year. Judging by the muttering I'd heard in the kitchen all week long, that would happen when hell froze over and those women were skating on it. By the time we had unloaded her precious cargo, Amma was already harassing the judges about table placement.
"You can't put a vinegar after a cherry, and you can't put a rhubarb between my creams. It'll take the taste right out of them, unless that's what you boys are looking to do."
"Here it comes," said my dad under his breath. As the words came out of his mouth, Amma gave the judges the look, and they squirmed in their folding chairs. My dad glanced over at the exit, and we slunk outside before Amma had a chance to put us to work terrorizing innocent volunteers and intimidating judges. The moment we hit the crowds, we instinctively turned in opposite directions.
"You going to walk around the fair with that cat?"
My dad looked down at Lucille sitting in the dirt next to me.
"Guess so."
He laughed. I still wasn't used to hearing it again.
"Well, don't get into trouble."
"Never do." My dad nodded at me, like he was the dad and I was the son. I nodded back, trying not to think about the last year when I was the grown-up and he was out of his mind. He walked his way, I walked mine, and we both disappeared into the hot and sweaty masses. The fair was packed, and it took me a while to track down Link, but true to form, he was hanging out by the games, trying to flirt with any girl who would look at him, today being a prime opportunity to meet a few who weren't from Gatlin. He was standing in front of one of those scales you hit with a giant rubber mallet to prove how strong you are, the mallet resting on his shoulder. He was in full drummer mode, in his faded social distortion t-shirt, with his drumsticks stuck in the back pocket of his jeans and his wallet chain hanging below the sticks.
"Let me show you how it's done, ladies. Stand back. You don't want to get hurt."
The girls giggled as Link gave it his best shot. The little meter climbed up, measuring Link's strength and his chances of hooking up at the same time. It passed a real wuss and wimpy and headed toward the bell at the top, a real stud. But it didn't quite make it, stopping about halfway at Chicken Little. The girls rolled their eyes and headed for the ring toss.
"This thing's rigged. Everyone knows that,"
Link shouted after them, dropping the mallet in the dirt. He was probably right, but it didn't matter. Everything in Gatlin was rigged. Why would the carnival games be any different?
"Hey, you got any money?"
Link pretended to dig around in his pockets like he might actually have more than a dime. I handed him a five, shaking my head.
"You need a job, man." "I've got a job. I'm a drummer."
"That's not a job. It's not called a job unless you get paid." Link scanned the crowd, looking for girls or funnel cake. It was hard to tell which, since he responded equally to both.
"We're trying to line up a gig."
"Are the Holy Rollers playing at the fair?"
"This lame scene? Nah."
He kicked the ground. "They wouldn't book you?"
"They said we sucked. But people thought Led Zeppelin sucked, too."
As we walked through the fair, it was hard not to notice that the rides seemed to get a little smaller and the games a little shabbier every year. A pathetic-looking clown dragged a cluster of balloons past us. Link stopped, hitting me on the arm.
"Check it out! 6 o'clock. Third-degree burns."
As far as Link was concerned, a girl couldn't get hotter than that. He was pointing at a blonde who was headed in our direction, smiling. It was Liv. "Link," I tried to tell him, but he was on a mission.
"As my mom would say, the good Lord has good taste. Hallelujah, amen."
"Ethan,"
she waved at us. Link looked at me.
"Are you kidding me? You've already got Lena. That's just wrong."
"I don't have Liv, and these days I don't even know if I have Lena. Be cool." I smiled at Liv until I noticed she was wearing a faded Led Zeppelin t-shirt. Link saw it at the same time I did.
"The perfect girl."
"Hey, Liv, this is Link." I elbowed him, hoping he'd close his mouth. "Liv is Marion's summer research assistant. She works with me at the library." Liv held out her hand. Link stood there gawking.
"Wow."
The thing about Link was, he never embarrassed himself. Just me.
"She's an exchange student from England." "Holy wow."
I looked at Liv and shrugged.
"I told you."
Link broke out his biggest smile for Liv.
"Ethan didn't tell me he was working with a hot babe of cosmic proportions."
Liv looked at me, pretending to be surprised.
"You didn't? I find that rather tragic."
She laughed and linked her arms through ours.
"Come on, boys. Explain to me exactly how it is you make this strange cotton into candy."
"I can't give away national secrets, ma'am." "I can."
Link squeezed her arm with his.
"Tell me everything."
"Tunnel of Love or the kissing booth?"
Link grinned even wider. Liv tilted her head.
Hmm, that's a tough one. I'm going to go with the Ferris wheel.
That's when I caught sight of the familiar black hair and the scent of lemons and rosemary in the breeze. Nothing else was familiar. Lena was a few yards away, standing behind the ticket booth in what had to be Ridley's clothes. Her black tank rode up on her stomach, and her black skirt was about 5 inches too short. There was a long streak of blue in her hair, twisting down from where it parted around her face and down her back. But that wasn't what shocked me most. Lena, the girl who never put anything on her face but sunscreen, was covered in makeup. Some guys liked girls with crap all over their faces, but I wasn't one of them. Lena's black-rimmed eyes were especially disturbing. Surrounded by cut-off denim and dust and straw and sweat and red and white plastic checkered tablecloths, she looked even more out of place. Her old boots were the only thing I recognized. And her charm necklace, dangling like a lifeline back to the real Lena. She wasn't the kind of girl who wore stuff like that. At least, she didn't used to be. The lowlifes were checking her out, 3 guys deep. I had to resist the urge to punch all of them in the face. I dropped Liv's arm.
I'll meet you guys over there.
Link couldn't believe his luck.
No problem, man.
We can wait, Liv offered.
Don't worry about it. I'll catch up with you.
I hadn't expected to see Lena here, and I didn't know what to say without sounding even more whipped than Link already thought I was. As if there's something you can say to sound cool after your girlfriend takes off with another guy.
Ethan, I've been looking for you.
Lena walked toward me, and she sounded like herself, her old self, the Lena I remembered from a few months ago, the one I was desperately in love with, the one who loved me back. Even if she looked like Ridley. She stood on her tiptoes to push my hair out of my face, her fingers dragging slowly down my jawline.
That's funny, because the last time I saw you, you were ditching me.
I tried to sound casual, but I just sounded angry.
I wasn't ditching you, exactly.
She was defensive.
No, you were throwing trees at me and jumping on the back of a bike with some other guy.
I wasn't throwing trees.
I raised an eyebrow.
Yeah?
She shrugged.
More like branches.
But I could tell I had gotten to her. She twisted the tiny paperclip star I had given her until I thought it was going to snap off of her necklace.
I'm sorry, Ethan. I don't know what's going on with me.
Her voice was soft, honest.
Sometimes I feel like everything is closing in, and I can't take it. I wasn't ditching you at the lake. I was ditching me.
You sure about that?
She looked back up at me, a tear sliding down her cheek. She wiped it away, her fingers balled in frustration. She opened her fist and put her hand on my chest, resting it over my heart.
It's not you. I love you. I love you.
She said it out loud this time, and the words hung in the air between us, so much more public than when we kelted. My chest tightened when she said it, and my breath caught in my throat. I tried to think of something sarcastic to say, but I couldn't think about anything except how beautiful she was and how much I loved her, too. But I wasn't letting her off that easy this time. I broke the truce.
What's going on, El? If you love me so much, what's the deal with John Breed?
She looked away without saying a word.
Answer me.
It's not like that, Ethan. John's just a friend of Ridley's. There's nothing going on between us.
How long has nothing been going on? Since you took that picture of him in the graveyard?
It wasn't a picture of him. It was his bike. I was meeting Ridley and he happened to be there.
I noticed she ignored the question. Since when have you been hanging out with Ridley? Did you forget the part where she separated us so your mother could get you alone and try to convince you to go over to the dark side? Or when Ridley almost killed my father?
Lena pulled her arm away from me, and I could feel her withdrawing again, moving back into that place I couldn't reach.
Ridley warned me you wouldn't understand. You're a mortal. You don't know anything about me, not the real me. That's why I didn't tell you.
I felt a sudden breeze as the storm clouds rolled in like a warning.
How do you know whether I would understand or not? You haven't told me anything. Maybe if you gave me the chance instead of sneaking around behind my back.
What do you want me to tell you? That I have no idea what's going on with me? That something's changing? Something I don't understand? That I feel like a freak, and Ridley's the only one who can help me figure it out?
I could hear everything she was saying, but she was right. I didn't understand.
Are you listening to yourself? You think Ridley's trying to help you? That you can trust her? She's a dark caster, Elle. Look at yourself. You think this is you? The things you're feeling, she's probably causing them.
I waited for the downpour, but instead the clouds parted. Lena moved closer and put her hands on my chest again, staring up at me, pleading.
Ethan, she's changed. She doesn't want to be dark. It ruined her life when she turned. She lost everyone, including herself.
Ridley says going dark changes the way you feel about people. You can sense the feelings you had, the things you loved, but Rid says the feelings are distant, almost like they belong to someone else.
But you said it wasn't something she could control.
I was wrong. Look at Uncle Macon. He knew how to control it, and Ridley's learning too.
Ridley is not Macon. Heat lightning flashed across the sky.
You don't know anything.
That's right. I'm a stupid mortal. I don't know anything about your super-secret caster world and skanky caster cousin, or caster boy and his Harley.
Lena snapped.
Ridley and I were like sisters, and I can't turn my back on her. I told you, I need her right now, and she needs me.
I didn't say anything. Lena was so frustrated, I was surprised the Ferris wheel hadn't come loose and rolled away. I could see the lights from the tilt-a-whirl spinning in the corner of my eye, churning and dizzying. It was the way I felt when I let myself get lost in Lena's eyes. Sometimes love feels that way, and you find your way to a truce when you don't really want to. Sometimes the truce finds you.
She reached up and laced her fingers behind my neck, pulling me into her. I found her lips, and we were all over each other as if we were afraid we might never have the chance to touch again. This time, when her mouth tugged at my bottom lip, biting gently into my skin, there was no blood, just urgency. I turned, pushing her against the rough wooden wall behind the ticket booth. Her breath was ragged, echoing in my ear even louder than my own. I raked my hands through her curls, guiding her mouth to mine. The pressure in my chest started to build, the shortness of breath, the sound of the air as I tried to fill my lungs, the fire. Lena felt it too. She pushed away from me, and I bent over, trying to catch my breath.
Are you okay?
I took a deep breath and stood up again.
Yeah. I'm all right.
For a mortal. She smiled a real smile and reached for my hand. I noticed she had drawn crazy-looking designs on her palm in Sharpie. The black curls and spirals swirled from her palm around her wrist and up the base of her arm. The pattern looked like the henna the fortune teller wore in the tent that smelled like bad incense at the other edge of the fairgrounds.
What is that?
I held her wrist, but she pulled it away. Remembering Ridley and her tattoo, I hoped it was Sharpie.
It is. Maybe we should get you something to drink. She led me around the side of the booth, and I let her. I couldn't stay mad, not if there was a possibility the wall between us was finally coming down. When we kissed a minute ago, that's what I felt. It was the opposite of the kiss on the lake, a kiss that had taken my breath away for different reasons. I might never know what that kiss was, but I knew this kiss, and I knew it was all I had. A chance. Which lasted 2 seconds. Because then I saw Liv carrying 2 cotton candies in one hand and waving at me with the other, and I knew the wall was about to go back up, maybe for good. "Ethan, come on! I have your cotton candy. We're going to miss the Ferris wheel." Lena dropped my hand. I knew how it must have looked. A tall blonde with long legs and 2 cotton candies and an expectant smile. I was doomed before Liv even got to the word "we." "That's Liv, Marion's research assistant. She works with me at the library." "Do you work at the Dairy Queen together, too? And the fair?" Another flash of heat lightning tore across the sky. "It isn't like that, El." Liv handed me the cotton candy and smiled at Lena, holding out her hand. "A blonde?" Lena looked at me. "Seriously?"
"Lena, right? I'm Liv."
"Ah, the accent. That explains everything."
"Hi, Liv."
Lena pronounced her name like it was an inside joke between us. She didn't touch Liv's hand. If Liv noticed the slight, she ignored it, letting her hand drop.
"Finally! I've been trying to get Ethan to introduce us properly, since it seems he and I are chained together for the summer."
"Clearly." Lena wouldn't look at me, and Liv wouldn't stop looking at her. "Liv, this really isn't a good..." I couldn't stop it. There were 2 trains colliding in painfully slow motion.
"Don't be silly,"
Lena interrupted, looking at Liv carefully, as if she was the Sybil in her family and she could read Liv's face.
"So nice to meet you."
"He's all yours. Take the whole town while you're at it." It took Liv about 2 seconds to realize she'd walked into something, but she tried to fill the silence all the same.
"Ethan and I talk about you all the time. He says you play the viola."
Lena stiffened. "Ethan and I." There was nothing mean about the way Liv said it, but the words themselves were enough. I knew what they meant to Lena. Ethan and the mortal girl, the girl who was everything Lena couldn't be.
"I've gotta go."
Lena turned around before I could catch her arm.
"Lena, Ridley was right. It was only a matter of time before another new girl came to town."
I wondered what else Ridley had been telling her.
"What are you talking about? We're just friends, El."
"We were just friends once, too." Lena took off, pushing her way through the sweaty crowd, causing a chain reaction of chaos as she went. Her ripple effect seemed endless. I couldn't see it perfectly, but somewhere between us a clown fumbled as the balloon character in his hands popped, a child cried as a snow cone dropped, and a woman screamed as a popcorn machine began to smoke and catch fire. Even in the slippery blur of heat and arms and noise, Lena affected everything in her wake, a pull as powerful as the moon to the tides, or the planets to the sun. I was caught in her orbit, even as she pulled away from mine. I took a step and Liv put her hand on my arm. Her eyes narrowed as if she was analyzing the situation or registering it for the first time.
"I'm sorry, Ethan. I didn't mean to interrupt. I mean, if I was interrupting, you know, something."
I knew she wanted me to tell her what happened without having to ask. I didn't say anything, which I guess was my answer. The thing is, I didn't take another step. I let Lena go. Link walked toward us, fighting his way through the crowd, carrying three Cokes and his own cotton candy.
Man, the line at the drink booth is brutal.
Link handed Liv a Coke.
What did I miss? Was that Lena?
She left, Liv said quickly, as if things were that simple. I wished they were.
Whatever. Forget the Ferris wheel. We'd better get over to the main tent. They're gonna announce the winners of the pie-baking contest any minute, and Amma will tan your hide if you aren't there to watch her moment of glory.
Apple pie? Liv brightened.
Yep, and you eat it wearing Levi's with a napkin tucked into your shirt up here, drinking a Coke and driving a Chevy while singing American Pie.
I listened to Link ramble and Liv's easy laugh as they walked ahead of me. They didn't have nightmares. They weren't haunted. They weren't even worried. Link was right. We couldn't miss Amma's moment of glory. I sure wasn't winning any ribbons today. The truth was, I didn't need to bring the mallet down on the old rigged carnival scale to know what it would say. Link may be Chicken Little, but I felt lower than a real wuss. I could pound away all I wanted, but the answer would always be the same. No matter what I did lately, I was caught somewhere between loser and zero, and it was starting to feel like Lena was holding the hammer. I finally understood why Link wrote all those songs about getting dumped. June 15th. Tunnel of Love.
If it gets any hotter in here, people are going to start dropping like flies. Flies are going to start dropping like flies.
Link wiped his sweaty forehead with his sweaty hand, which sprayed liquid Link on those of us lucky to be standing next to him.
Thanks for that.
Liv wiped her face with one hand and pulled her damp shirt away from her body with the other. She looked miserable. The southern crusty tent was packed, and the finalists were already standing on the makeshift wooden stage. I tried to see over the row of enormous women in front of us, but it was like standing in the Jackson cafeteria line on cookie day.
I can barely see the stage.
Liv stood on her toes.
Is something supposed to be happening? Did we miss it?
Hold on.
Link tried to edge between the smaller of the two enormous women in front of us.
Yeah, we can't get any closer. I give up.
There's Amma, I pointed. She's won first place almost every year.
Amma Trudeau, Liv said.
That's right. How did you know?
Professor Ashcroft must have mentioned her.
Carlton Eaton's voice blared over the loudspeaker as he fussed with the portable mic. He always announced the winners because the only thing he loved more than opening everyone's mail was the spotlight.
If y'all will bear with me, folks, we got some technical difficulties. Hold on now. Can someone call Red? How am I supposed to know how to fix a darn microphone? Shoot, it's hotter than Hades in here.
He mopped his forehead with his handkerchief. Carlton Eaton never managed to remember when the microphone was on. Amma stood proudly to his right in her best dress with the tiny violets all over it, holding her prize-winning sweet potato pie. Mrs. Snow and Mrs. Asher were next to her, holding their own creations. They were already dressed for the mother-daughter peach pageant that started right after pies. They were equally frightening in their respective aqua and pink pageant mother gowns, which made them look like aging prom dates from the 80s. Thankfully, Mrs. Lincoln was not in the pageant, so she stood next to Mrs. Asher in one of her standard church dresses, holding her famous chess pie. It was still hard to look at Link's mom without remembering the insanity of Lena's last birthday. You don't see your girlfriend's mother stepping out of your best friend's mom's body too many nights of the year. When I saw Mrs. Lincoln now, that's what I thought of. the moment Seraphine emerged like a snake shedding its skin. I shuddered. Link elbowed me.
Dude, look at Savannah. She's got the crown on and everything. She sure knows how to milk it.
Savannah, Emily, and Eden were sitting in the front row with the rest of the peach pageant contestants, sweating away in their tackiest pageant evening wear. Savannah was in yards of glittery Gatlin peach, with her rhinestone peach princess crown balanced perfectly on her head, even though the train of her dress kept snagging on the bottom of her cheap metal folding chair. Little Miss, the local dress shop, probably had to special order it for her all the way from Orlando. Liv edged her way closer to me, eyeing the cultural phenomenon that was Savannah Snow. Is she the queen of Southern Krusty, then? Liv's eyes twinkled, and I tried to imagine how strange this all must look to an outsider. I almost smiled. Just about. I didn't realize baking was so important to Americans, anthropologically speaking.
I don't know about other places, but in the South, women take their baking seriously. And this is the biggest pie baking contest in Gatlin County.
Ethan, over here!
Aunt Mercy was waving her handkerchief in one hand and carrying her infamous coconut pie in the other. Thelma was walking behind her, shoving people aside with Aunt Mercy's wheelchair. Every year Aunt Mercy entered the contest, and every year she got an honorable mention for her coconut pie, even though she'd forgotten how to make it about 20 years ago, and none of the judges were brave enough to taste it. Aunt Grace and Aunt Prue were arm in arm, dragging Aunt Prue's Yorkshire Terrier, Harlan James, behind them.
Well, fancy seeing you here, Ethan. Did you come to see Mercy win her ribbon? Of course he did, Grace. What else would he be doing in a tent full of old ladies?
I wanted to introduce Liv, but the sisters didn't give me a chance. They kept talking over one another. I should have known Aunt Prue would take care of that for me.
Who's this, Ethan? Your new girlfriend?
Aunt Mercy adjusted her spectacles.
What happened to the other one? The Duquesne girl with the dark hair?
Aunt Prue looked at her suspiciously.
Well, Mercy, that's just none of our concern. You shouldn't be asking anything about it. She might have up and left him. Why would she do that? Ethan, you didn't ask that girl to get naked, did you?
Aunt Prue gasped.
Mercy, Lynn, if the good Lord doesn't strike us all down on account of that talk...
Liv looked dizzy. She obviously wasn't used to following the banter of 300-year-old women with thick, upcountry accents and fractured grammar.
Nobody tried. Nobody left anyone. Everything is fine between Lena and me, I lied,
even though they'd find out the truth the next time they went to church, if their hearing aids were turned up high enough to hear the gossip.
This is Liv, Marion's summer research assistant. We work together at the library. Liv, this is Aunt Grace, Aunt Mercy, and Aunt Prudence, my great-great-aunts.
Don't you be adding any extra greats in there.
Aunt Prue pulled herself up a little straighter.
That's her name, Lena. It was on the tip of my tongue.
Aunt Mercy smiled at Liv. Liv smiled back.
Of course, it's a pleasure to meet you all.
Carlton Eaton tapped on the mic just in time.
All right, y'all. I think we can get started. Girls, we need to get up to the front. They'll be calling my name in no time.
Aunt Mercy was already working her way through the aisles, rolling forward like an army tank.
We'll see you in two shakes of a rabbit's tail, sweet meat.
People filed into the tent from all three entrances, and Lacey Beecham and Elsie Wilkes, the winners of casseroles and barbecue, took their places next to the stage, holding their blue ribbons. Barbecue was a big category, even bigger than chili, so Mrs. Wilkes was about as puffed up as I'd ever seen her. I watched Amma's face, so proud, not glancing at one of those women even once. Then I watched it darken, and she looked off toward one side of the tent. Link ribbed me again.
Hey, look it! I mean, you know, the look.
We followed Amma's stink eye to the far corner of the tent. When I saw who she was looking at, I tensed. Lena was slouching against one of the tent poles, eyes on the stage. I knew she couldn't have cared less about a pie-baking contest, unless she was here to root for Amma, and from the looks of it, Amma didn't think that's why Lena was here. Amma shook her head at Lena, ever so slightly. Lena looked away. Maybe she was looking for me, though I was probably the last person she wanted to see right now. So what was she doing here? Link grabbed my arm.
She's...
Lena glanced across to the pole opposite her. Ridley leaned against the pole in a pink miniskirt, unwrapping a lollipop. Her eyes were fixed on the stage, like she actually cared about who was going to win. I knew she didn't, because the only thing she cared about was causing trouble. Since there were about 200 people too many in the tent, this seemed about as good a place for trouble as any. Carlton Eaton's voice echoed over the crowd.
Testing, testing. Can y'all hear me? All right, then. On to cream pies. We have ourselves a close one this year, folks. Had myself the pleasure of tasting a few of these pies, and I'm here to tell you every single one of 'em's a winner, in my opinion. But I reckon we can only have one first-place winner here tonight, so let's see who it's gonna be.
Carlton fumbled with the first envelope, ripping the paper loudly.
Here it is, folks. Our third-place winner is... Trisha Asher's creamsicle pie.
Mrs. Asher scowled for a millisecond, then flashed her phony smile. I kept my eyes locked on Ridley. She had to be up to something. Ridley didn't give a crap about pie or anything that happened in Gatlin. Ridley turned and nodded toward the back of the tent. I looked behind me. Castor Boy was watching with a smile. He was standing by the rear entrance, his eyes on the finalists. Ridley turned her attention back to the stage and slowly, deliberately, began sucking on her lollipop. Never a good sign.
Lena.
Lena didn't even blink. Her hair began to twist in the stagnant air, blowing in what I knew was the casting breeze. I don't know if it was the heat or the close quarters or the grim look on Amma's face, but I was starting to worry. What were Ridley and John up to, and why was Lena casting here? Whatever they were trying to do, Lena must be trying to counteract it. Then I figured it out. Amma wasn't the only one dealing out the look like a bad spread of cards. Ridley and John were staring down Amma too. Was Ridley stupid enough to mess with Amma? Was anyone? Ridley held up the lollipop as if to answer.
Uh-oh,
Link stared.
We should probably get out of here.
Why don't you take Liv to the Ferris wheel? I said, trying to catch Link's eye. I think things are going to be pretty boring for a while.
Now we've reached the most exciting part of the judging, said Carlton Eaton as if on cue. All right, y'all, this is it. Let's see which one of these here ladies is gonna be taking home a second-place ribbon and $500 worth of brand-new bakeware, or a first-place ribbon and $750, compliments a Southern Krusty. 'Cause if it ain't Southern Krusty, it ain't the South, and it ain't Krusty.
Carlton Eaton never finished, because before he could say the words, something else came out. Of the pies. The pie tins began to move, and it took people a few seconds to realize what was happening before they started screaming. Grubs and maggots and palmetto bugs, Carolina cockroaches, started crawling out of the pies. It was as if all the hate and lies and hypocrisy of the whole town, of Mrs. Lincoln and Mrs. Asher and Mrs. Snow, the principal of Jackson High and the DAR and the PTA and every church auxiliary, all rolled into one, had been baked into those pies, and now it was coming to life. Bugs were pouring out of every pie on stage, more bugs than the pie tins could possibly hold. Every pie except Amma's. She shook her head, her eyes narrowing into slits like some kind of challenge. Hordes of cream-covered grubs and roaches hit the floor around the contestants' feet, but the trail of scurrying insects diverged in a neatly forking path around Amma. Mrs. Snow reacted first. She hurled her pie, sticky fruit-covered bugs rocketing into the air and landing all over the front row. Mrs. Lincoln and Mrs. Asher followed suit, maggots raining down on the peach pageant contestants' satin dresses. Savannah started screaming, not fake screaming, but real, blood-curdling screams. Everywhere you looked, there were pie-covered worms and people trying not to puke at the sight of them. Some were more successful than others. I saw Principal Harper doubled over a trash can by the exit, getting rid of a whole day's worth of funnel cake. If Ridley was looking to stir up trouble, she had succeeded. Liv looked ill. Link tried to push forward into the crowd, most likely to rescue his mom. He had been doing that a lot lately, and considering how unrescuable his mother was, I had to give him credit. Liv grabbed my arm as the crowd surged forward toward the exits. "Liv, get out of here. Go out that way. Everyone's heading for the sides." I pointed to the back exit of the tent. John Breed was still standing there, smiling at his handiwork, his green eyes fixed on the stage. Green eyes or not, he wasn't one of the good guys. Link was on the stage brushing worms and bugs off his mother, who was completely hysterical. I worked my way closer to the front.
"Somebody help me!"
Mrs. Snow looked like someone in a horror movie, terrified and screaming, her dress alive with squirming bugs. Even I didn't hate her enough to wish this on her. I caught a glimpse of Ridley, sucking away on her lollipop, bringing bugs to life with every lick. I didn't know she could pull off something this big by herself, but then again, she had Castor Boy to help her.
"Lena, what's happening?"
Amma was still standing on the stage, looking like she could bring down the whole tent with a single look. Bugs and worms were crawling over each other at her feet, but not one was brave enough to touch Amma. Even the bugs knew better. She was staring down at Lena, her eyes narrow and her jaw tight, as she had been from the moment the first grub crawled its way out of Mrs. Lincoln's chess pie.
"You fixin' to make me do this now?"
Lena stood at the edge of the tent, her hair still twisting in the casting breeze, the corners of her mouth upturned into the smallest shadow of a smile. I recognized it for what it was. Satisfaction.
"Now everyone knows what's really in your pies."
Lena hadn't been trying to stop them. She was part of it.
"Lena, stop!"
But there was no stopping now. This was payback for the guardian angels and the disciplinary committee meeting, for every token casserole left at the gates of Ravenwood, and every pitying look, for every insincere sentiment offered by the folks of Gatlin. Lena was handing it right back, as if she'd saved every bit, storing it all up until it exploded in their faces. I guess this was her way of saying goodbye. Amma spoke to Lena as if they were the only people in the tent.
"Enough, child. You can't get what you want from these folks. Sorry from a sorry town is nothing but a whole lot more of the same. A pie tin full of nothing."
Aunt Prue's voice pierced the din.
"Good Lord, help! Grace is having a heart attack!"
Aunt Grace was lying on the ground unconscious. Grayson Petty was kneeling over her, taking her pulse, while Aunt Prue and Aunt Mercy batted palmetto bugs away from their sister.
I said enough!
Amma roared from the stage, and as I ran for Aunt Grace, I could have sworn the tent was going to come down on top of us. As I bent down to help, I saw Amma pull something out of her pocketbook and hold it high above her head. The one-eyed menace, our old wooden spoon in its full glory. Amma brought it down on the table in front of her with a crack.
Ow!
Across the room, Ridley winced and the lollipop dropped right out of her hand, rolling across the dirt as if Amma had smashed it with the menace itself. In that second, everything stopped. I looked over to Lena, but she was gone. The spell, or whatever it was broken. The palmetto bugs scampered out of the tent, leaving only the grubs and worms behind. And me, leaning over Aunt Grace to make sure she was breathing.
Lena, what have you done?
Link followed me out of the tent, confused as usual.
I don't get it. Why would Lena help Ridley and Castor Boy pull a stunt like that? Someone could have really gotten hurt.
I scanned the rides closest to us to see if there was any sign of Lena or Ridley, but I didn't see them. Just the 4-H volunteers fanning old women and handing out plastic cups of water to the victims of the pie-baking contest from hell. You mean like my Aunt Grace? Link yanked on his shorts to make sure they were grub-free.
I thought she was a goner. Lucky she just fainted. Probably the heat.
Yeah, lucky. But I didn't feel lucky. I was too angry. I had to find Lena, even if she didn't want to be found. She was going to have to tell me why she would terrorize everyone in that tent to get even with... who? A few aging beauty queens? Link's mom, who was just aging? It was something Ridley would do, not Lena. It was getting dark, and Link scanned the crowd through the flashing lights and hysterical church ladies.
Where'd Liv go? Wasn't she with you?
I don't know. I told her to go out the back when the bug fest started. Link cringed at the word bug.
Should we look for her?
There was a group of people in line at the funhouse, so I headed that way. I get the impression Liv knows how to take care of herself. I think this is something we have to do on our own.
Right on.
We turned the corner a few yards from the entrance to the Tunnel of Love. Ridley, Lena, and John were standing in front of the dingy plastic cars painted to look like gondolas. Lena was standing in the middle, a leather jacket slung over her shoulders. Only she didn't have a leather jacket. John did. I called her name without even thinking.
Lena!
Leave me alone, Ethan.
No.
What were you thinking, Lena?
I wasn't thinking. I was finally doing something.
Yeah,
something stupid.
Don't tell me you're on their side now. I was walking fast. Link struggled to keep up with me.
You're gonna start a fight, aren't you? Man, I hope Castor Boy doesn't set us on fire or turn us into statues or something.
Link was usually up for a fight. Even though he was skinny, he was almost as tall as me and twice as crazy. But the prospect of fighting a supernatural didn't have the same appeal. We'd been burned on that one before. I wanted to let him off the hook.
I've got this. Go find Liv.
No way, dude. I've got your back.
When we got to the gondolas, John stepped forward protectively, in front of the girls, as if we were the ones they needed to be protected from.
Ethan, get out of here.
I could hear the fear in her voice. But this time I was the one who didn't answer.
Hey, boyfriend, how's it going?
Ridley smiled and unwrapped a blue lollipop.
Screw you, Ridley.
She noticed Link behind me, and her smile changed.
Hiya, Hot Rod. You want to take a ride through the Tunnel of Love?
Ridley tried to sound playful, but she sounded nervous instead. Link grabbed her by the arm and pulled her toward him, almost like he really was her boyfriend.
What did you think you were doing back there? You could have gotten someone killed. Ethan's 400-year-old aunt almost had a heart attack.
Ridley snatched her arm back. It was only a few bugs. Don't be so melodramatic.